Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ. Call Cheryl now with your questions about gardening or landscaping at 512-836-0590, pound 590 on your wireless, or toll free 1-877-590-KLBJ.
Hey, everybody. I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at a text. You're listening to the Austin Gardener. I'm Cheryl McLaughlin, and we are here for the next hour to invite you to comment, question, and what have you, anything about landscaping, gardening, what have you. So this text that I'm laughing at is, she sent a picture of a caterpillar. Keeps coming up on her porch, and she says, what is this? Do you know what this is? And Jeff says, not sure. What plant did you find it on? Okay, for the first answer, though, I tried Google Lens and picture this. Google tells me it's a worm. And picture this tells me it's a fungus. So you got to take these things, with a grain of salt. But usually they're pretty reliable. But he went on to say, Google says it's a Texas buck moth or oak worm moth caterpillar. That's fun. That's fun. I love the responses you can get. A lot of times they'll just say, oh, it's a weed, whatever it is. Well, anyway, here we are. Definitely survived. Apocalypse was nothing bothersome about it, in my opinion. It was fun. I went and saw the eclipse with the kids, and that was exciting, just seeing them experiencing it. But now back to gardening. 512-836-0590. That is the call or text number. And we have a toll-free line if you need that. It's 877-590-5525. So again, 512-836-0590. Call or text. What I would suggest to people wanting to identify moths and caterpillars or whatever, there is a great book by Gayeta, I can never pronounce her last name, Ajilsvi, called Butterfly Gardening for Texas. Her original book was called Butterfly Gardening for the South. But she did a revised edition, and it's now Butterfly Gardening for Texas. And she shows the pictures of the caterpillars, what plants they eat, all that kind of stuff. So it's an amazing book. Any books she writes, and she's written several, are just so accurate. They're just 100% accurate. She has Wildflowers of the South. I looked something up in it just yesterday. I highly recommend any books of hers, but it's cool because you can see the caterpillars. Okay, let's take our first call. And if you want to join the show, 512-836-0590, call or text that. Let's go to Round Rock. Hey, TJ, how's it going?
Cheryl, I am doing good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, wanted to get your thoughts on how to salvage a row of red tips in my backyard. Just to give a bit of historical context, they're about 12 to 15 years old. These are the tall they grow 20 feet at least if I don't trim them back. And over the last 5 years, I've lost one or two here and there. Have you had any luck with salvaging these red tips? I understand that in this area of Texas, once they become infested, it's kind of tough to just minimize the damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Any thoughts?
Well, if you've only lost one or two here and there, and you still have a fairly healthy hedge of them, they may not have that fatal soil-borne disease. It just could be bad luck. But you might try using actinivate in the soil. That's one possibility. The other thing that really is damaging about red-tip photinias is they get black spot every spring without fail. They always get it. And then people try to cut them back while they have it, right? Especially these, low knowledge maintenance companies. they'll go in and they'll cut them, which just spreads it. They should never be pruned while they have the black spot. And eventually they throw it off, right? And then they go on to become, you know, red tips are fine usually if you just let them grow to the size they want. The problem is most people want to keep them, you know, 6 feet tall, and they want to be like yours. They want to be small trees.
Yeah. Okay. So I should put some, what was the name of the
Actinovate. Actinovate. You might want to Google it and see. I mean, it might help somewhat. It's been shown to be pretty effective against some of these soil-borne issues.
And that's just putting it, spreading it on the soil around the red tip?
I think you may have to work it in a little bit. But,
okay.
Yeah, but that's one thing that I've heard. There also could be some other liquid products you can use. I mean, I don't know if yours have the black spot or not, but
they do.
Always do.
They have the black spots on it right now. I noticed that I just lost one over the winter, so when I went out and looked at it, it's completely dead. At least all the leaves are dead on it.
It's
giving me all signs that one is gone. But, you know, the ones that are right next to it are showing the signs of black spots.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, I lost at least two. And they're showing signs of black spots, too. So,
well, you know, it's possible that you're going to see a continuing die-off. And if so, you just need to kind of get emotionally prepared for it, because sometimes it goes fast. And, you know, one will look fine one day, and then all of a sudden it just turns brown, and it's really frustrating. So, but you could try treating it with Actinovate. I don't know of any other cure.
Okay, good deal. Yeah, like I said, I just wanted to see if you had any strategies. Have you dealt with these over the years of, your landscape?
I've watched them, go day on pretty fast sometimes, but I hope yours don't do that.
Okay.
All right.
I would try that. I appreciate it.
Let me know if you help. I appreciate your call. All right, let's do that first break. We'll get it over with, and we'll come back to William and then Rex.
Welcome to The Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back, and let's go right to the phone lines. Georgetown. Hey, William.
Hey, good morning, Cheryl. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Hey, I got a question. I've had a, when I bought my house about 6 years ago, I had this big, enormous, beautiful crepe myrtle out in my front yard. And it was, I've got a large front yard. It's got St. Augustine grass all over it. And this crepe myrtle was right in the middle of it. And it was beautiful, beautiful. But the last two winters, I think some ice got in there, it just devastated it. And I had my, when my tree trimmers were out, I had them, I didn't let them go through with the full crepe myrtle, but I had them kind of top, take a few, maybe a foot or two off the top, because they were starting to look dead. And throughout the years, I've cut out the dead inside branches that extended up there. But I think the thing is fully dead now. And
really?
So my question is, I kind of a two-parter. One, what is it going to cost me to get in there to have someone come out, take that tree out, and do I have to deal with the roots and stuff? And then two, do you have any recommendations of something big, nice, and beautiful I can put back in there? I mean, I'd be open to another crepe myrtle, but that thing was beautiful, and I want something just as pretty out there.
I wonder why it died. That's surprising to me. It hasn't leafed out at all.
There's like one small offshoot that that's leafing, but it's pretty clear the tree is dead. All the other main trunks have started turning black.
Oh yeah,
and I can see cracking in them.
Well, it's true that the last few years have been so hard on plants, with the hard freezes and drought and everything else. But Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed, or nor would I, you know, say don't go back in with another crepe myrtle. What I would do is just make sure that the St. Augustine is cleared out around the base of your new plant. As far as getting it cut down, I mean, I'm not looking at it, but you're probably going to have to, you know, pay a couple hundred dollars to get it removed at least. I mean, depending on how big it is. But then, yes, it'll spring back up from the stump. So if it's a big stump, you might want to get the stump ground down, which means, of course, that you're not going to plant in that exact same spot, right? You're going to have to move over a few feet.
Okay, yeah, it's such a nice spot in the yard, and I feel like it gave such a perfect amount of shade to the St. Augustine underneath. Mm-hmm. It's the best spot in my yard for the grass, which was the reason I loved it.
You can get those roots removed. I mean, you can grind them down, but you can also get guys out there with picks and chainsaws and what have you, and actually remove the root ball. You know, it's just extra labor. It just kind of depends on how much money you got to spend on this. But it's certainly doable. I mean, in our landscaping company, we did that many times, if that is the perfect spot.
Yeah, it's a really nice area, and we intend on staying in this house for a long time, so I want to invest some money to put something pretty out there again.
What color was the crepe myrtle?
It was kind of a nice reddish pink.
Yeah, there's one. Look at one called Dynamite.
Dynamite, okay.
Dynamite.
They grow pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah, they do, but you can get pretty big ones, too. So, again, this may be a little bit of an investment, but it might be worth it.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, and last question. You know, I kind of looked around online for pricing, and it seems to vary quite a bit. But I should budget at least $1,000 for removal and putting the new tree in, not in including the cost of the tree. Is that about right?
Well, I think that might be a little bit more than you have to spend. It depends on what size of plant you go back in there with, right? You're in Georgetown, mm-hmm. You can go to McIntyre, someplace like that, and get a good deal.
Do I need to wait until the fall, or is it too late to get something in if I try to action it in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, get it in now. Just get it in as soon as you can. That'd be what
okay,
I'd do.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you,
thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut his off. Let's go to Lavernia. Hey, Rex, thank you for your patience.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay, I have a flower bed in front of my house. It doesn't get a whole lot of sunshine, but I have some very antique lilies in there that are over 100 years old.
Wow.
I've gathered them up in my grandmother's yard and my great-grandmother's yard, and I've carried them through my life from house to house, mm-hmm. and now they're at their final resting place. And last year, my son mowed the yard, and he threw all the seeds from when he mowed up into the flower bed, and now I have a lily garden that's full of weeds.
Dang.
What can I spray in there? Because there's too many to pull, okay? What can I spray in there that won't kill my lilies?
Well, I mean, there's nothing that you can broadcast that'll kill the weeds that won't hurt the lilies. I mean, you could protect the lilies and spray something like a real strong vinegar. I don't know what the weeds are, whether they're perennial.
I think it's mostly coastal.
Ew, and that is a perennial weed. So I don't know. Can you hire somebody to come in there and physically weed that out for you? Because that's going to be the best thing you can do.
I mean, I've been told that by a couple of people, and I just wanted to make sure that I would talk to a professional about this, and, well...
Yeah, I mean, because if
I'll just have to wet it down real good so they pull. I mean, I put real good dirt in there, too, so once the moisture's up, they will pull, but I'm looking at 3 hours of hard labor.
Well, I got a suggestion for you. That kid that blew that stuff up in there needs to come back out there and do that.
Well, there's an old saying, but I can't say it over the radio.
Well, listen, good luck. I wish I had a better answer for you.
All right, well, thanks for taking my call. Have
Absolutely.
A good week.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, 512-836-0590. Let's do a few texts here while we wait for more calls. Boy, that's a pretty picture you sent me. It says, my pomegranate is blooming after blooming now after like 24 years of not. What gives? The only thing different I did, which could have spurred it on, was cut it down to the ground. It was like 10 or 12 feet tall. Well, that absolutely must have been it, because it is gorgeous. There's nothing prettier than pomegranate blooms. You just don't get that color very often. Okay, and then somebody sent me a link controlling Entomosporum leaf spot on woody ornamentals. So it's aces.edu/blog/topics for landscaping. So I think the best thing you can do is Google controlling leaf spot on woody ornamentals, and I'll bet you'll get this link. Here's another one. I have a bed of volunteer frostweed. We got a great frost show this past winter. Should I trim back the frostweed? If so, how much and what time of year? Last year, they grew to be 5 or 6 feet tall. Thanks for sharing your garden wisdom. Karen in Southeast Austin. Yeah, you can trim them back. If they haven't started growing back again yet, you can trim back all the dead stuff on the frostweed. You can cut them all the way to the ground if you want to. Okay, here's another text. What happened to my elm tree that I had planted last fall? It leafed out at the bottom, but the top two-thirds are dead. My landscaper said he's seen lots of examples of this year, but didn't say what to do about it. Cut off the top? Let it be and expect a miracle? Well, it's never going to come back on that dead wood. And what I would say to you is, when a tree dies from the top down, it's typically lack of water that kills it. In addition to which, all the weeds and grass growing around the base of this little oak tree are not helping. They are hindering the tree. The other thing that'd be going on is it might have sunk a little bit too deep. So be sure, if you dig out that grass, it'll help it a lot and keep it away from the base of it. Mulch it really well. And I'll talk more about it, but we got to go do the news. We'll be back.
Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back. And again, if you would like to join the show, 512-836-0590 is the call or text line. And we have the toll-free line, which is 877-590-5525. So I want to go back and finish up with this, what happened to my elm tree. The top half of this tree is dead. I'm going to refer, so after the snowpocalypse and all that stuff, there was a young red oak tree. It was probably 12 feet tall at a church that I drive by all the time. And the main leader, we call it, the main trunk stem died back, but the bottom half of the tree was alive. And I thought to myself, oh, that's never going to work. That tree's a goner. They ought to just take it out. But they didn't. They left it alone. And you should see how pretty that tree is now. Yes, it probably doesn't have the same leader trunk that it had before, nor will yours have that. But if you take care of this thing, I think you're going to still be able to get, you know, some good strong branches. So again, you cut off that dead stuff, you get that grass out from underneath it, make sure you can see the root flares. In other words, at the base of the trunk, you should be able to see little roots going out to the side, flaring away. If it goes straight into the ground like a trunk, or a post, that means it's buried too deep, and that can also cause problems. So get the grass up from around it. Put down some compost, mulch, like shredded Texas native mulch, something like that. And then a good deep watering. And if we're not getting rain, you may want to deep water it every week or 10 days. And you should be able to get it going back up. You could even put down some nitrogen fertilizer, time-release organic nitrogen fertilizer. That could help it as well. But, you know, why not just try? And I'm sorry that did happen to you, so. Okay, 512-836-0590. I got some pretty pictures here from Jeffrey in Southwest Austin. He's the one that always sends me the beautiful oak leaf hydrangea pictures, and his is already starting to bloom, and he shows a poinsettia that he had in the greenhouse over the winter that's still red. And I think you've probably heard me talk about my grandmother's poinsettias in New Braunfels. She planted some out in the front of the house, which was an eastern exposure. So they got morning sun, afternoon shade. The house shaded them in the afternoon. And we had those poinsettias for I don't know how many years, those things. I don't even know what ever happened to them, but they did the regular poinsettia thing every year. They would turn, they were spectacular. They would turn red. And there were some in Austin that I used to see on Old South First Street in an old house kind of up high above the street on the in the front of their house, and theirs did the same thing. So it's interesting. Poinsettias, morning sun, afternoon shade. You can get them growing in the ground around here. Okay, here's another text. Morning, Cheryl. Suggestions for ground cover to put between a paver path in the yard, which is total shade and mud in this spot. We have St. Augustine everywhere else. Thank you. From Georgetown, love your show, Leslie. Okay, Leslie, if you just want a little ground cover and deep shade, we have a few things that would probably work for you. The native horse herb with those tiny little yellow flowers, horse herb, would be, you know, the number one easy peasy thing to put there. That would be your kind of default native ground cover. But there's also wonderful little violets, little tiny violets that work well. We have a native one called wood violet. And then there's a cultivar that I love called royal robe violet. And it's a really short, little, beautiful plant, shiny evergreen leaves. Also, you could just go with like dwarf monkey grass, which is similar to turf. I mean, it kind of looks like grass, but it's very tough in the shade. I mean, it's just bulletproof, really. So dwarf monkey grass, and also in that same line of thinking, the native sedges. Now, sedges typically prefer cool weather, but they have, if they get water, they'll last all year round. And so I would look at those selections and see what you think about that. For that little muddy area. Okay, here's a phone call coming in. Let's go to the phone lines. James from Guadalupe County, how are you doing?
Hey, just fine. I got all the tomatoes watered this morning, and I'm going to go get some tacos. How you doing?
Sounds good. I'm great.
Hey, Japanese persimmon, it's a fuyu. I've got a fence around it to keep the deer from nibbling on it, and it gets compost tea early in the season, and after the bloom, I give it another shot of compost tea. But my question is, what are those little flower parts that fall off of the flower that are on the ground right now underneath the Japanese persimmon?
I don't know. It's just part of the flowers, right? Maybe it's starting to shed the flowers and putting fruit on yet?
Yeah, you look at the bloom, and there's a hard pointed white thing, and I think that's the fruit. I've never really looked that close on them.
Yeah.
But I was wondering what that discarded part of the flower was.
Well, I don't know the exact, part per se, but that's what's going to happen is it starts to form the fruit. The flowers just aren't necessary anymore, and they begin to fall off. So I don't know which exact part. I mean, it's the petals or something.
All right. Okay. Then that means it's got flowers and set fruit. The reason I'm asking is I need to give it another shot of compost tea after flowering, and I'm not real sure it's finished yet. So that's the reason for my question.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you still have fully formed flowers that have not set fruit, then you might want to wait a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'll probably end up doing. All right. Thanks.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Hudson Bend. Hey, Chuck. How you doing out there?
Good morning. How you doing?
Good, good. What's up?
I have a general question, trying to figure out what type of fertilizer to put on a certain plant, but does the plant matter when you're trying to figure out the fertilizer, or is it all about what's going on with the soil?
No, the plant does matter. For instance, evergreens and grass, you know, like turf grass, they're mostly interested in a nitrogen fertilizer. So when you get out your, and what we always recommend are the time-release organic fertilizers. They are either formulated for grass and evergreens, which means the first number is going to be the highest. Or there are also different formulations for flowering things. So if you give a plant, a flowering plant, too much nitrogen, it doesn't like to flower. It just likes to put on leaves. So that can be an issue. Hey, I got to do the news. Do you want to hold on?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. Let's get this break over with. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back. Let's finish up with Chuck and then move on after that to WD. Chuck, you there?
Yeah, I'm there. So to zero in, I've got a property line hedge with viburnum sandanquas, and I'm trying to get them to grow faster vertically up.
Mm-hmm.
What fertilizer can you recommend for that?
Well, you know, they do bloom in the spring, but that's a very brief bloom. I'd probably just go with an 824, one of those kind that are like what we use on the grass.
824, okay.
Yeah.
You sprinkle some around the base of each plant?
Yeah, and then as it rains or you water, it'll just slowly but surely dissolve.
Perfect.
Sandanquas are slow-growing evergreens, so don't, think they're going to shoot up like a cottonwood or something.
Okay, just be patient.
Yeah, they take a while. They're good plants.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Now let's go to Northwest Austin. WD, how you doing?
Hey, good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good, good.
I have a bed prepared on the east side of the house. It gets full morning sun, and a neighbor is going to give me some irises. Is that a good spot to plant them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think irises would be great there.
Yeah, it'll get like zero or minimal midday sun and no afternoon sun.
Well, I'm thinking about my first iris bed that I had when I was a little kid. My grandmother let me have a bed of iris. It was under a big pecan tree. However, as I think back on this, that pecan tree would have been dormant when those iris were blooming in the spring. So they might have got more sun than I thought they did. I always was thinking they're in shade. Now, I have one or two little irises at my house now. They get morning sun and afternoon shade, and they bloomed real pretty this year because I guess the conditions were just right. They don't always bloom every year. They're kind of old. But I think that would be okay. I mean, of course they would like more sun than that if they could have it. So if you had another place that got more sun, I'd probably suggest at least put some of them in full sun if you've got a place.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't, but or nothing prepared anyway.
Are your neighbors?
Is there anything I have to do special to the soil? Because, you know, my thumb is not that green, so I tend to try to grow the easy growers, you know?
Yeah, me too. Are these regular old flag iris, like, you know, you're thinking of, or they, they're, because there's other irises. There's African iris, which are more like big grasses with a different kind of bloom. But if these are regular old, you know, flat, what we call flag iris, best thing you can do is, you know, don't plant them too deep and plant them with a handful of rock phosphate in the bottom of the hole when you put them in.
Okay.
But they are not ready to be removed and transplanted now. They should not be coming out of the ground until probably at least June. Because
I'm sorry. The ones she's going to give me are in a pot.
Okay, so you could go ahead and put them right in. Just don't plant them too deep. Plant them same kind of height they are right now.
Okay.
And you ought to be good to go. And I would not mulch them until it gets a lot hotter, because that's the one thing you can kill an iris is too much water in poorly drained bed. You know, so that's what I always tell people, because sometimes we get a lot of rain in May, right?
And sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But if you do, if you put them in there and they get, and you have mulch and then we get a ton of rain, they can stay a little bit too wet. So,
well, what I've done is I've mixed some of the, actually the area had about 30 years worth of oak leaves. So I removed a top layer of it and some of the soil and the old composted leaves. I've mixed in with like leaf litter, I should say, where it's basically composted.
Yeah, if it's fully composted, that sounds good.
Okay, that wouldn't be too hot for it or anything.
Not if it's fully composted. I mean, all you have to do is stick your hand in there, and you know, if it's not hot, you're good to go.
Okay. But
if it's hot, you need to wait till it's cold.
Yeah, I don't even know what color, you know, what type of irises these are and or the color of the blooms, but it's the right price. It's free, and and it kind of, even if it doesn't bloom, it'll create some greenery in that area, which would probably look okay.
Yeah, see if they work. You know, if they bloom next, you won't know probably till next spring if they're already done blooming, and they might be close to being done. But you know, there are other things you could mix in with a bed like that that would be wonderful planting companions. Lots and lots of stuff like morning sun and afternoon shade around here.
Okay, very good, because I was entertaining that thought, because you know, it's not a lot of irises, so I could possibly plant something in between them.
Yeah, they're black and blue salvia would be gorgeous. Variegated ginger would be pretty. You could put in pavonia, which would be gorgeous in that bed. I could go on and on.
Okay, you did say salvia, right?
Yeah, black and blue sage. The dark blue ones, the black and blue is the most shade tolerant one.
Black and blue. Okay, good to know.
They're gorgeous.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Good luck with that.
Thanks, bye.
All right, bye. Okay, one more text here. Cheryl, driving back from Grapevine last Sunday, I thought I heard you say yellow roses do not do good in the Austin area. When I pulled in the driveway, my plant that a friend gave me was in full bloom. It's a beautiful yellow rose, by the way. It's called Julia Child. It was given to me during COVID, so you know what type of weather it's survived over the years. Just wanted to share, Deb. Yeah, Deb, that is gorgeous. And no, I did not say that yellow roses, as a rule, don't do well here. We were talking about the one they call Grandma's Yellow Rose. which is used to be called Nacogdoches rose. But Grandma's Yellow Rose is one of the ones that does really well here. There aren't a lot of yellow roses that do well here, and I don't know why. But obviously, Julia Child does really well. Let's see, one last text. Hi, I have this slope area, and I wondered about your thoughts about putting something that would trail over the rocks. Any ideas? Oh, gosh, yeah, there's tons of stuff. I'd probably go straight for trailing lantanas. They do so well. There's the ones that root at the nodes, the purple and the white trailing lantana, and then there's the ones that are what we like new gold lantana. They come out from a central core, but they would trail beautifully over that area. Also, verbena would grow over those stones. Ice plant. I can think of 15 things that would do pretty, but lantana attract butterflies and stuff. Okay. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today, for all your great questions and comments. I appreciate it very much. Have a great week. We're going to be getting up towards 90 this week, so enjoy today. And let's cross our fingers and hope we get some more rain. We need to fill that lake up. So, all right. Thanks again. I'll see y'all next Sunday. Bye.